And now you're thinking, Barry's lost his mind. We've got a game we've got to tie in, and now we've got a horse that we have to tie in. And it all begins with, do you know the answer to this question? When is a horse not a horse? You know when a horse is not a horse? When is a zebra? Mr. Ed was played by a horse named Bamboo Harvester. Whenever you see him running or being ridden or in full view, it was Bamboo Harvester. However, according to legend, they had difficulty in training the horse to move its lips to mimic human speech. Go figure, right? However, a solution presented itself. Again, according to legend, in the nearby park, there was a jungle, the nearby Jungleland Animal Park at Thousand Oaks, California. They had a trained zebra. The zebra was a female called Amelia, and it was trained to open and close its mouth on cue. According to legend, Jungleland consented to lend her out for a few days for the filming of the pilot of Mr. Ed. Amelia worked out fantastically and exceeded everyone's expectations. And due to how black and white television works, the producers found out a zebra's stripes do not show up on black and white television. Thus, they decided 'twas easier to make a zebra look like a horse than teach a horse to talk. To their credit, CBS will neither confirm nor deny this legend. But I would like to point out that Mr. Ed was airing and was still in the top 10 in ratings when color television came out. Instead of taking Mr. Ed to color television, the show was pulled from the air. Isn't that a cool story? Isn't that awesome? And you know what you can learn from Mr. Ed? Spiritually speaking, the way we see things is not always how they really are. Now, we started our service with our VBS game, and we played Tim the Tail on the Horse. And again, if you were bummed out that you didn't get to play it, there are plenty of other little stickers, and I'm going to put the blindfold back, and you are welcome to stand behind the blue line and try your luck to see how close you can get to sticking that little tail on that horse. And you know, it's not that kind of a game, is it? We put you in a line, we give you a little sticker, we put a blindfold on you, and we tell you to walk on, that's probably what, about maybe 5 feet at the most, and hold out the tail and stick it. Did you notice though? When Ava did it, when she was the little one, she just kind of walked right on up there and put it on, and there she was. We got to Aaliyah, and Aaliyah, a little more cautiously. We got to Caitlin, and did y'all notice the first one to do it? She's an adult. I'm going to feel my way just a little bit to get myself close. And Linda, she followed the same suit because she's an adult. She knows I want to find out where I'm going to be before I make a fool of myself and like stick it over here on the curtain somewhere. I at least want to get close. That game really shouldn't be that challenging, but what makes the game challenging? It's the blindfold, right? I mean, if I just let you stand behind the blue line and I gave you the little tail to stick on there and I just told you to walk a few feet and stick it on there, I'm going to guarantee you that I could probably line everybody up here and y'all could probably get close to that spot and everybody would probably be about the same. It's that blindfold that makes it all challenging. And wearing a blindfold is kind of fun when it comes to playing a game like Pin the Tail on the Horse. But in real life, how would you like to try driving your car blindfolded? Okay, for some of us, that might actually be safer. I don't know. But trying to drive your car blindfolded, and you know what? Cooking sounds like a really dangerous idea if you're going to try to do it blindfold. And even things that were meant to be fun, something like watching TV or going to the movies, if you were made to wear a blindfold, it would lose something. So the lesson, and you should be able to tell your kids this because they heard this and they're going to want to know, what was the lesson behind the Pin the Tail on the Horse? We do not see properly because oftentimes we are wearing a spiritual blindfold. So our sermon series is called Woe. And whenever you do a series like this, everybody is sure that the person sitting next to them is the Pharisee, because there is no way on earth that I could be the Pharisee. Nobody wants to admit that they are the Pharisee. Of course, maybe the real reason that we don't want to admit that we're the Pharisee is because we just can't see it. Jesus addresses the fact that we often can't see ourselves in woe number 3. And so we are in Matthew chapter 23. I'm going to be reading from verses 16 through 22. And this is what it says. "Woe to you, blind guides! You say, if anyone swears by the temple, it means nothing. But if anyone who swears by the gold of the temple is bound to that oath, you blind fools, which is greater, the gold or the temple that makes the gold sacred? You say, if anyone swears by the altar, it means nothing. But anyone who swears by the gift on the altar is bound by that oath, you blind men. Which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? Therefore, anyone who swears by the altar swears by it and everything on it. And anyone who swears by the temple swears by the one who dwells in it. And anyone who swears by heaven swears by God's throne and by the one who sits on it." Interesting. Jesus has another problem with the Pharisees as we reach woe number 3. And the first thing he calls him is a blind guide. Now, it says that they're blind not because they refuse to look. It's because they're careless leaders. I mean, think about what these guys are doing. They're sitting here and, they're trying to tell people, "I'm guiding you, but I'm not real sure what's going on either." And blind guides, they sound kind of dangerous. Because guides are supposed to be knowledgeable leaders, right? Really, when you go on a trail and you've got a guide, don't you want somebody that's maybe walked that trail before? Somebody that knows exactly what's going on? They're supposed to know how to get there. Do you really want a guide that has no idea where the ending is supposed to be? If you're following somebody, don't you want to know they know how to get where you're supposed to be? They're supposed to know where the dangers are, right? Isn't that what a blind guide is supposed to do? A guide's supposed to do? They're supposed to know where all the twists and turns and where the cliffs are and where the loose gravel are and where the wetness is so you don't get your shoes off. They're supposed to know that. And you know what else they're supposed to know? They're supposed to know who's in the group. Don't you want a guide who knows you? You don't want to be the person that's just a tag along and the guide has no idea you're there, because then if you fall into trouble, what's going to happen? Well, I don't know what happened to them. Yeah, I started out with 17, I only got 16, but I don't really know all these people. But, hey, look, 99% ain't bad, right? That's not what you want when you're talking about a guide. And the fact is, the Pharisees could not see past their own silly statements. They were blinded by themselves guiding people toward God. As I begin to look at that, I understand Jesus' next statement. Because not only did he call them blind guides, you know what else he said they were? He said they were blind fools. That doesn't sound nice to call somebody a fool. Well, you know what? When that's what you make yourself, then that's the name you earned. And Jesus calls them a blind fool. A fool is just a person who acts untruly or unwisely or imprudently. Jesus calls them blind fools because they really couldn't see past their own foolishness. It says they split hairs and parsed words. They put things out there and they said, "Well, if you do it this way, it doesn't count. But if you do it this way, it does count." So they were parsing their words and moving their words and being very careful how they spoke things. I remember playing this game when I was a kid, and my parents would ask a question. I would always listen to the question very carefully. Because if they would ask me the question, I listened to it very carefully, I was sure I could figure out a way I could answer that question in my favor and not tell a lie. Because if they said, "Did you do that?" "No, I didn't do that." The person next to me, I encouraged them, I helped them, I showed them, I instructed them, but not me, I didn't do that. Yeah, this is how they were playing their game with God. They swore oaths that they were never about to keep. They made a commitment, and they just passed it off. In their foolishness, they began to give power to trivial things, and they began to look for spiritual loopholes. Look at what these guys were doing. They were swearing and standing up in front of people saying, "This is what I intend to do for God." But you know what? Behind their back, I got my fingers crossed. Because I only swore on the temple. I didn't swear on the gold of the temple. And since I didn't swear on the gold of the temple, it doesn't really count. So I've got my fingers crossed. And doesn't that sound silly? That sounds something that maybe a kindergartner might do. But surely not grown men who have committed themselves to be leaders of people. Oh, and by the way, when it comes to being men, that's what Jesus said they were. They were blind men. At the end of the day, that's what they were. They were just men. Now, I want to give them a little bit of a pass here. Because they were trying to be righteous by living by a bunch of man-made rules. And by the way, that is what religion is all about. I've made some rules that I think are going to bring me closer to God. Maybe I've even thrown a little scripture behind it, and I think I'm all good. But you know what, really? The rules that I made up. And well, when they could not keep the laws and the rules, they then began to make exceptions to the rule. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? I tell you, this is how it's supposed to work, except in this situation, there's got to be an exception for the rule, because what happens if I can't live up to the standard? I've got to have a way to get myself out of the mess I've gotten myself into, so you just make another rule, right? And they were literally allowing themselves to become blinded by themselves. And I began to think about this, and I began to look at this, and I began to wonder about seeing our blind spots, and I came up with this question. Can you see a blind Pharisee? Not if he is me. Think about that for a second. If you are the blind Pharisee, and you can't see the Pharisee in you, and you stand in front of the mirror, and you're blind, and you can't see, you're wearing the blindfold, and you physically can't see, then really, can you ever really see the Pharisee in yourself? No. Because you're blinded by yourself. So I can appreciate this little message that Jesus gives them, and he calls them out. And then, you know what? There's a moment in time when Jesus kind of reinforces this little lesson here. Because he says, I'm going to tell you about a man that was born blind. So if you have your copy of God's Word, we're going to leave Matthew 23. That was kind of our little introduction. And we're going to move over to John chapter 9. And well, I'm going to teach you five things that cause spiritual blind spots. Things that we do in our everyday life, things that we do in our spiritual life, ways that we live our life, and you know what? They blind us to the fact that we're really not following God. And they make us become the blind Pharisee. And interesting enough, our five things we're going to learn come from four very distinct groups of people. And the very first people that we meet, well, these are the Christians. These are the followers of Jesus. So I'm in verses 2 through 5. So remember, they're walking to town, and they all see the blind man standing there begging. And this is what it says. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus. "But this has happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming. No one can work while I am in the world. I am the light of the world." So you have to appreciate what we're dealing with here. The disciples saw this man, and he was sitting there, and he was there, and he was begging, and immediately, there we were, his followers. They began to have this judgmental attitude about this man. They looked at him, and they said, there's something wrong with him. And since there's something wrong with him, they immediately assumed there was a sin issue. Now, they've made two very bad mistakes here. Mistake number one, they assume there's something wrong with him. There's not. I mean, yes, he was born blind, but that doesn't make him defective. God made him that way. God had a purpose for his blindness. And then the second mistake they made is not only is there something wrong with him, but because there's something wrong with him, that means there must be something that they did in their past. There has to be sin in their life, or their parents did something, and his blindness is a punishment for sin. And I have to tell you something. We do this in churches today. We see people, and they aren't living up to the standard. We see something going on in their life, and we immediately begin to pass judgment. Well, you're going through this because you must have done something wrong in your life. Do you know what image you paint of God when you do that? You make God look like a spoiled little brat. Well, since you didn't do things my way, I'm going to punish you just because of that. Funny thing is, the disciples, they didn't know this man, nor did they know his parents. They didn't know him. They probably didn't even know his name. We don't even know his name. They just looked at him and they said, well, obviously there's something wrong with you because you know what? You're not like me. Do you see the blindfold that comes with that kind of a statement? You've assumed that God has punished this man, so you're putting on your little blindfold and you're like, okay, God, I don't see the Pharisee living in me because obviously I'm perfect, so I don't have any sin to deal with. And I love Jesus' response. He didn't even let him finish the sentence, I bet, all the way. I bet this is one of the few times in life that Jesus interrupted somebody because he quickly rebuked them. He said, you know what? You guys have it all wrong. First of all, he's not defective. As a matter of fact, he's going to serve a purpose in God's plan. And by the way, you are totally wrong because neither his parents nor he sinned. You know what? This is something that God is going to use to show people they have blind spots. And your first blind spot that you need to worry about is, well, a judgmental attitude. How people got where they are, God doesn't care, so you know who else shouldn't care? Me either. How you got to your situation is not as important as do you see God? So we move on, and the disciples, I guess, learned to stop saying anything for a minute. Even Peter went quiet. Jesus worked his miracle. And you know what? Now we're back in front of the crowd. Keep in mind, this is one of those miracles that didn't have a huge audience. Basically, I think it was just the disciples. So Jesus worked the miracles and then sent the man out there. So in verses 8 through 9, his neighbors, those who had formerly seen him begging, asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that he was, and others said, no, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I am the man. So again, they didn't get to see the miracle. They just got to see the finished product. And isn't it amazing? They were cynical. I saw that man. I've known that man. I've known that man since he was little. He's always lived here. He's been sitting by that daggone gate for so many years begging. I know that man, and this ain't him because the man sitting at that gate can't see, and this one can. They refused to believe. They were cynical. It says that they questioned the man about his identity, even though they knew him his entire life. Do you know what it must have been like for that man? Do you know how much that must have just wrenched his heart to know that something great has happened in his life? And you know what? They should have been celebrating, right? Man, this should have been the biggest party in the city. Jesus has come to town. Jesus has restored this man's sight. Jesus did this. We should be out celebrating about how changed his life is. And what are they doing? I don't know. He looks an awful lot like him, but maybe he had a twin brother somewhere. Maybe somebody got some good makeup, and you know, it's not really him. I don't know. Can you speak for me so I can listen real careful to your voice? I just don't believe it, because you know what? I'm cynical. In my heart of hearts, I really don't believe Jesus could totally change somebody. So I'm always kind of looking over the edge of my glasses, and I'm kind of looking at them, and I'm waiting for them to mess up or make another mistake, because what I really want to do is say, I told you so! See? They didn't change. You know what I'm doing, don't you? Back on comes my blindfold. I don't see a problem with what I'm doing. Of course, how can I see? I, friends, have a spiritual blind spot. I've allowed myself to be cynical. And instead, their blindness just left them looking. As we move on from the crowd, they ain't figured it out yet. But man, they sure do have a solution. Let's take him to the Pharisees. Verses 13 through 16. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now, the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Therefore, the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He put mud on my eyes, the man replied, and I washed, and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep Sabbath. Oh, my goodness, you knew it was coming, right? You knew we'd get here eventually. Remember that term I gave you on the very first week, that term legalism? Watch legalistic attitude at work here, folks. See, I sort of feel sorry for this poor man. Again, today should be the greatest day of his life. However, his lack of blindness is beginning to show everybody else's blindness. Not because they're just merely judgmental, not because they're cynical, but because they have a legalistic attitude, because Jesus did a no-no. Jesus healed him on the Sabbath. You know, Jesus did this 7 times. I almost get the feeling by the time we get to this point in the story, Jesus is like, watch this one. I'm going to do it again, and you watch. We're going to get the exact same response. They're still going to be hanging on to their Sabbath laws. You know who made all the Sabbath laws? The Pharisees. They were their laws. God just said, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. He asked us not to do work. He asked us to set aside time for the relationship. And so the Pharisees had made all of these rules about work. And so here comes Jesus. He's like, I'm really going to get him this time. I'm not just going to heal him. Jesus got down on the ground, and it says he got down on the ground, and he spit in his hands, and he scooped up mud, and he just kept going until he had little mud pies. You ever make mud pies when you were kids? So Jesus has a mud pie in his hand, and then he tells the blind man to come here, and he dips into the thing, and he begins to rub it on the man's eyes. You know what Jesus did, don't you? He made a mud pie, and therefore, since he made a mud pie, he now has worked on the Sabbath, because you weren't allowed to even make food on the Sabbath, according to the Pharisees. Oh my goodness. Jesus broke the rules. Then he has the audacity to look at the man that he had just healed, that he just put the mud pie on. He said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go down to the Jordan, and I want you to wash the mud off your eyes. And when you wash the mud off your eyes, you will be able to see. You know what the problem is? He told him to go wash, and that means that was like taking a bath, and you weren't allowed to take a bath on the Sabbath according to the Pharisees. Because to wash yourself takes work, and therefore you weren't allowed to work. And so now we've broken 2 rules here, right? We've made something, and we have worked, and we have washed, and so there ain't no way on earth this man Jesus can be from God. This ain't God's miracle. You know how I know? Because he broke my rules. Even though at one point I'm making oaths and trying to work my way around them, I broke the rules. And so you know what? They began to question it again. And here's the thing. Breaking the rules of the Sabbath, whose rules did he break? Did he really break God's? Did he do anything wrong? Was it really a sin to make a mud pie on the Sabbath? I hope not, because I know a lot of kids that still do this today. Is it really a sin to go get in the water and wash yourself Okay, if you've ever done something else and you're really hot and sweaty, go wash, please. We encourage you. They had made up these rules and they had tightened the noose so much around people's necks that they could not even see a miracle. It robbed them of their vision, because you know what they did? They said, we made rules about this, Jesus. We said no working on the Sabbath, no washing on the Sabbath, no making things on the Sabbath. And once again, look, we don't see our own blindness. Why? Because I have blind spots, folks. I've made the rules more important than the people, even to the point that the guy, they go get mommy and daddy. And they bring mommy and daddy in. They said, okay, we got some splaining to do here, folks. Verses 18 through 23. They still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. Is this your son? They asked. Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that now he can see? We know that he is our son, the parents answered, and we know that he was born blind. You know, I really, really, really feel sorry for this man at this point. It's one thing for a bunch of strangers that don't know you to judge you. And it's another thing to have a bunch of people that you grew up with be cynical if something happened. And it's even another thing to have a bunch of righteous people that just are self-righteous people begin to tell you it's not happening. But now we've got the man's parents on here. And you would think when they saw their son and he could see, what would a parent do? Come on, you're a parent, what would you do? Yes! Yes! Thank you, God. I've been praying for this. I've been praying that you would send somebody. Somebody would come and heal him. Thank you, Jesus. Oh, no. That fearful attitude began to pop up. And instead of being grateful and thanking God, but how can he now see? Who opened his eyes? We don't know. Okay. That's honest. They weren't there. Ask him. He's of age. He will speak for himself. So they put the man on the island. His parents said this because they were afraid of Jewish leaders who had already decided that if anyone acknowledged that Jesus was the Messiah, would be put out of the synagogue. That was why his parents said, of age, ask him. Oh my gosh. Well, you can't do that here because you know what? You play them silly games in church here and we'll put you out of the church. That's crazy talk. Good thing that's not a rule here. Y'all be looking for a new minister many years ago. Because this isn't even the strangest thing we've ever done here. But you get what's happening here. They allowed their religious rules to form the safety dome over top of what God was doing. And even when God was standing right in front of them and it worked a miracle, they couldn't see it. Because they were afraid if they saw it, somebody might look at him and say, well, you're one of them crazy Jesus followers. You ain't allowed in the synagogue anymore. We're going to put you out. You know what they did, right? Oh, man, yeah, I know, yeah, he's my son, but trust me, we didn't see who healed him. And trust me, we don't know, so you're going to go have to ask him because we are afraid of you, and there's our blindfold. We're just afraid. And that would be nice if it was the end of the story. And maybe you found yourself in one of those blind spots. Maybe you've judged somebody wrongly or quickly. Maybe you're the cynic that just refuses to believe. Maybe you are the person that is just so stuck in your own rules that you become very legalistic in your approach toward God. Maybe you're just afraid of what people are going to think. And all of that would be awesomely bad, but not as bad as the end of the story. I'm down in verses 39 through 40, and this is how the story ends. Jesus said, For judgment I have come into the world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind. Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, what? Are we blind too? Our story started with the Pharisees over in Matthew chapter 23, and Jesus telling them that they were blind men, blind guides, blind fools. And now he is standing here getting ready to teach a lesson, and their question is really simple. What, Jesus, you think I'm the blind one here? You already know the answer to that question, right? Jesus does think they're blind. As a matter of fact, in Matthew chapter 13, verses 13 through 15, Jesus tells us a very good lesson about understanding why people go through their life refusing to take this blindfold off, living the life the way they did. And it says, this is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, you will be ever hearing but never understanding. You will be ever seeing but never perceiving. For this, people's hearts have become callous. They are hard. They are hardly hearing with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, I might see with their eyes and hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them. How do you know you have blind spots? Well, let's listen to the words of Jesus. You might think you see truth, but you really do not. What you just see is the rules. You just see the things that we think are truth, but you know what truth really is? I know who he is. You know how I know he identified himself. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. Those are the words of Jesus. It says that you see facts, but you are unable to perceive application. Yeah, you can tell the stories. Yeah, you know all the details. You know all the things to say, all the right words to say, what you're supposed to wear, how you're supposed to walk, how you're supposed to talk, the things you aren't supposed to do. You know all the rules, but when it comes to actually applying it in your life, when you're out there in the world, you don't know how to do that. Jesus says you're blind. And as you continue in your blindness, it says that your heart is going to continue to grow harder and harder. He called it calluses. You know where you get calluses from, right? My dad always said that was the mark of a man that works hard. My dad was a workaholic, okay? But my dad always had calluses on his hands from all the work that he was doing. My hands have no calluses because I work on a keyboard. Yay! I don't go out and do the thing that he used to do, but God bless him. But you understand what calluses are. As you're beginning to work so hard, your skin becomes thick. And they begin to form blisters over it. And as it continues, it gets harder and harder and harder. And God says, when you continue to walk around with your spiritual blind spots and you refuse to take off your blindfold, that is what happens to your heart. Until you get to the point, you just don't care anymore. You see people and you just walk by them and say, you know what? God will deal with them as they want. The real issue is, I love it when Jesus told them this, they were not blind, they just had chosen to close their eyes and they refused to open them. Isn't that crazy? They weren't blind, they knew the truth, they knew what, they had all the prophets, they had everything that was going there, but they said, you know what, I don't believe it, if I close my eyes and I wish long enough, you know what, it's not going to work. Jesus said, you know what, they've chosen their blindness. And then he tells them, hey, unless you open your eyes, unless you take off your blindfold, you're never going to get healed. You're going to walk your entire life with a broken heart that only God can fix. Because Jesus came, he says, I came to heal. I came to restore a lost relationship. See, unless we are open to opening our eyes, we're not going to turn. And while Jesus says we're not going to overcome and never be healed. So this morning, here's my question. Are you willing to take this off? Don't fool yourself into thinking, well, I don't have one on. Yeah, you do. You know how I know? Because everybody has spiritual blind spots. But just for a moment, are you willing to take this off and say, hey, Jesus, whatever it is that you need to show me, show me. Not the person next to me, but let's work on me for a second. Will you heal my blind spots? Will you help me not to have such a judgmental attitude? Will you help me not to be cynical of people that have confessed and changed their, and trying to change their life? Will you help me not to be so legalistic that the rules are everything? Will you help me not to be fearful of proclaiming you are as the Messiah, regardless of what people think? Will you help me not to be so stubborn that I lose sight that you came not for just the people out in the world? You came to change my life, to give me a new heart.